Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's October 16th, 2019. I am Fran Sorcendi, naturopathic physician, finally back live with my co-host Ron Meniza, who, believe it or not, is also alive. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. I don't know about these progressive glasses. They're a problem. Because these glasses, if I look straight on at the computer screen, it's blurry. I have to tilt my head back like this in order to be able to see.
See, I do that with my bifocals. Right. The old-fashioned
exactly.
type. It's the same thing.
Well, usually when I'm staring at a computer screen, I just wear cheaters.
Well, that's why they're in my... I have cheaters with me, too, and I switch over when I'm on the radio because I'm just looking at computer screens, so it doesn't really matter.
I should probably bring cheaters here.
And I can see you just fine through my regular glasses.
Yeah, we're old enough to have presbyopia. Do you know what presbyopia is?
I'm about to hear.
Yeah, presbyopia is, you know, when you get farsighted when you get older because your lens, the lens in your eye gets less flexible. I don't know if there's a way to prevent that because... you know, I live a pretty healthy lifestyle. I wonder if I ate less sugar in my life, would I have more flexible lenses? And not everybody gets presbyopia. But, you know, I know that when I turned 40, one day I was in the, I was sitting with a patient. Patient handed me a bottle of supplements and asked me to check them out and look at them. And I looked at the bottle and I started going, wow, I can't see this. And I started pulling my hand away from my eyes and to the point where I could see it. And I went, uh-oh.
My arms are not long enough.
And then I went, then I proceeded to go to the store. I actually went to Whole Foods and they had a nice brand of cheaters and I got my first pair of cheaters and they were very pretty and I really liked them. They had tortoise on top and turquoise on bottom, which I really liked. And I wore them out, you know, until they broke. I loved them so much. And right now I started out needing 1.25s and now I'm up to somewhere between 1.5s and 1.75s. And I find, so this might be a tip for you. If you like to wear progressives and you're sitting at the desk and you're finding you're tilting your head up, there's two options. One is, which I could also do. I could see if I can, oh, I guess I can't do that.
So anyway, what were you saying?
I was going to attempt to lower the monitor, but that doesn't seem to be an option at the moment. But you can put the monitor down so that you're not tilting your head back. And the other thing that you can do is just wear cheaters because then, you know, wear, in other words, reading glasses that are only for reading, but they're not for distance at all. They're just basically magnifying glasses. And if you wear them at the computer, then you can see the whole computer, and you don't particularly have to move your head anywhere to see the screen.
I have less neck strain because of that.
That's right, and that's what I find. So when I'm with patients, I have to look back and forth because I have to look at the patient, I have to look at the screen, I have to examine them, I have to be able to walk around. So that's why. I tend to wear progressives at work. When I'm out and about doing stuff, then I'll wear my progressives. But I tend not to wear glasses at all when I'm out and about, and if I'm not in a professional situation, I often wear reading glasses on my head. That's something we probably should get into, how to help your eye health. You know, I haven't talked about eye health in a long time, so maybe we'll do that.
Like carrots and stuff?
Yeah, and there's all kinds of things that you could talk about because there's conditions that you get when you get older. So that's a teaser. At some point, maybe next week, we'll talk about eye health, you know, issues that people can get as they get older, you know, things like cataracts and macular degeneration, and what's the difference between wet macular degeneration and dry macular degeneration, and what you can do about it, and stuff like that. Okay?
Ooh. Yeah, that sounds like quite a subject.
Yeah, that's right. All right, but let's talk about the fact that when was the last time you were here live?
2 weeks ago. I've been off the air for 2 weeks in a row.
So wait, were you here? So you were, let me think about this. So you were here on the 25th, the day before I went to Florida.
I was here the same day you were here last.
So that's 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had 2 weeks off because I guess we're going to talk about that today.
We're going to talk about why you had all the time off, and it wasn't a good reason.
It wasn't a good reason.
It wasn't a joyful reason. You were supposed to be here.
Life
came at you fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. One of us should tell the story. Why don't you start without getting too graphic? Why don't you tell the story, and I will interject with medical information as we need to.
Well, right. I can get mildly graphic, and I can also have a theory here too, which I will talk to you about.
And I'll argue with you about it.
And you'll argue with me about
good.
It. Because
okay.
That's what we do, because we're like an old married couple.
Whatevs.
Whatevs. Yeah, there you go. So it started back with Lyme disease.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that I was on 18 weeks worth of antibiotics, which basically destroys your immune system, or doesn't do a lot of goodness to your immune system.
But you took probiotics, you drank kefir, and you took Saccharomyces boulardii.
I did, but I got a virus that I don't normally get or have that kind of the reaction that I had to it, and I got some sort of a stomach virus. And that stomach virus, which normally is...
You got an acute gastroenteritis.
Okay, that too. I called it a stomach virus.
Okay.
But anyway, what happened is...
Well, it wasn't just in your stomach, was it now?
Well, it gets complicated. So anyway, what happened was I normally am someone who processes these viruses, and then they go out the back end, to be less graphic than normal.
Yeah.
And still be descriptive. And that is almost, I would say 99% of the time, that's the way my body treats that type of virus.
It goes through you pretty quick.
It goes through me pretty quick. I have a very fast metabolism, and I think that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
But this one backfired, literally. And instead, it came out the other way. So I went through...
So you had nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea.
I had mostly nausea, vomiting.
Sudden onset.
Yeah, sudden onset. And it was on a Sunday, and it started around 11 o'clock in the morning or 11:30 in the morning, and it proceeded to hit me every hour on the hour. So I just couldn't keep anything down, which included... the breakfast I attempted to eat that morning, and any liquids that I was trying to put in, which then led me to make a long story short, led me to a 911 call from a hotel room to go to the emergency room because my body had
because
violently
you were
cramped.
Away.
I was away. Yes, I was away. I was up in the Berkshires announcing an event.
Right.
And I ended up doing that because I could not physically walk out to my car to get into a car and drive it to the emergency room, which is only 2 miles away.
So your whole body was cramped.
My entire body, my fingers were curled up in a knot. My toes were completely twisted and my ankles were twisted in because I was severely dehydrated.
So just be aware that when you have an acute gastroenteritis, by the way, the word gastroenteritis properly means the gastro is the that's the Greek word for your stomach, and enter is your that's your intestines. So an itis is inflammation. So you had gastroenteritis. You were inflamed from end to end. So really, you didn't just have a stomach bug. And also, I want to point out that people use the word stomach colloquially. And stomach clinically means something different than stomach colloquially. And, you have to sort that out. But when people refer to their whole abdomen as their stomach, but stomach clinically is the first part of your digestive tract. It's the big pouch that sits in the top of your abdomen where your food first goes. And then it finishes through your stomach, and then it goes into your small intestine, processes through there, and then goes through your large intestine. So when you have a bug like this, if you're having symptoms from your stomach as well as having diarrhea, you have gastroenteritis. The whole thing is inflamed. So go ahead.
So what that turned into is enough abdominal pressure that it created a hernia.
Right.
And the hernia basically allowed my small intestines, I believe, out.
That's right.
That was pinched.
Yes.
And it pinched it off to the point where I could no longer get food to go the direction it was supposed to go.
So here's the deal. You probably had an acute virus, and it's quite possible that your hernia happened almost immediately, and that's why you couldn't get anything down.
Right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you had stuff, you had diarrhea at first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it stopped.
Yes, because there was nothing left to come out.
Or because you were blocked.
Or I
so
was
we
blocked,
don't know
right.
at what point
from
that,
from that blockage point on had emptied out. But
so I read your records, and one of the things that Dr. Stewart wrote was that she wasn't clear about when it became obvious that you had the hernia, because there was no mention. Well, actually, we don't have the records from the Berkshires, and we should get those.
Yeah.
Because there was no mention
but
in the Berkshires.
They didn't say anything about it.
Right.
There.
They didn't say right. anything about it. And we don't know if that's because they didn't notice it or because it wasn't there yet. We don't know.
I think it was developing at that point.
Right. So, but that would make sense because, as you said, it is unlike you to get that usually you get a gastroenteritis and you clear it through having diarrhea and then it gets better. But in this case, you couldn't hold anything down. Your diarrhea stopped like the first day, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
And then, of course.
So that may be evidence that the blockage occurred the first day. And that's why you spent the rest of the week not being able to hold anything down.
Yeah, because I couldn't hold anything down.
Yes.
And then I started to feel the actual, you know, the hardness of the
hernia.
Of the hernia.
Yes.
Because it was very obvious.
Right.
At that point.
Right.
And the other thing is that because I was so depleted, I was in screaming agony. I can't believe how painful it is to have.
By the way, where was I?
Oh, you were down in Florida.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was kind of awful. And I kept asking him, should I come home? Should I come home? Should I come home?
There were some various reasons why that was awful. I had to stay overnight up there, which was not exactly what I had planned. I got my fluids back up. Long story short, I got my fluids back up enough so that I could drive myself home the next day, and that's what I did. And then I continued the same action. It just kept coming out and coming out, and I just couldn't hold anything in.
That's
no liquid at all.
I'm thinking the blockage happened very early on.
Which got me to the point where I ended up back in the emergency room at Wyndham Hospital because I was afraid that I was going to go into this dehydration thing again.
Which
was a smart thing to do because I knew I was not keeping any liquids down and all I had was a couple of bags of IV fluid in me and that was it.
So let me interrupt again.
Anyway, that's what got me into the hospital.
So let me interrupt again. So when you have an acute gastroenteritis, the gastroenteritis often isn't the worst deal. The thing that's bad about it, because these things pass through, you know, your body can fight off a gastroenteritis. It can even fight off the nasty norovirus, which can last more than a couple of days. And that's what I began to think that he had. But the biggest danger of gastroenteritis is dehydration. And in fact, you certainly the first night you suffered from dehydration. That's how you got all cramped up because you had lost a lot of fluid and electrolytes that keep your muscles soft. And so, you know, by Friday, I was talking to you every day. And when I heard that you still couldn't keep anything down, I'm like, all right, you have to make a decision. Probably tomorrow you should go back to the ER and you should get rehydrated. And so then you.
And then I went to get rehydrated. At Wyndham Hospital.
And big shout out to Kate Knight for taking you there and
yes,
taking care of
really
you while
big,
I was away.
Really big shout out to Kate Knight. She was my driving Miss Daisy for the time of that. Because I wasn't driving anywhere or doing anything. So she was helping me run my errands. And
I prefer
things.
To think of it as driving Mr. Cranky Pants.
Okay. Well, then I guess I can identify with that. Thank you for the referral.
Yeah.
So I anticipated that there was a problem because it didn't feel quite right. So I packed my bag with my computer and everything just in case.
Oh, that was smart.
I was thinking of it, and I put it in Kate's car just in case, and that was a good move.
Yeah.
But anyway,
she could have gone back to the house and brought it.
She could have, but she wouldn't have known what to look for or anything
Very
like
good.
That. So I was thinking ahead.
Good,
so
good for you.
So I got in there and they looked at me and they said, "You're not going anywhere right now." And they scheduled me for a CAT scan.
Right.
And they scanned.
Why did they schedule you for a CAT scan? What happened?
Because they were concerned about the fact that I had a bulging hernia.
Okay. And so they saw the hernia. The hernia was now obvious.
It was very obvious.
All right.
And much lower than where you're holding your hands. But anyway, yeah.
Because it was femoral.
Yeah. So they... I had mentioned it to them, too. I said, you know, I've also got this. And they went, whoa, hold still. We're not going anywhere. And they scheduled me for a CAT scan, and they rolled me down there. And when I got out of the CAT scan, the next visit, I believe, was from Dr. Stewart, the surgeon. And she said, you're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. We are going to open you up today. And
right.
I went in at around 9 o'clock in the morning, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was being operated on.
That's right.
And she explained to me exactly what she saw in the CAT scan and areas of interest and concern, and told me what might be happening is that I may have, that I definitely have a bowel obstruction, and she might have to resection that, in which case she did. So I had not just a hernia surgery, but I also had an abdominal surgery for bowel restructuring. It was quite a wonderful event.
Yeah.
I would not encourage anybody to go through this if they don't have to.
It was so exciting.
It wasn't exciting.
It was bad.
Because I am generally a pretty fit and healthy guy, and to have something like this happen, it takes you out of your game.
You are a fit and healthy guy. This was going to happen. The hernia was probably going to pop at some point. You had a simple mm-hmm. gastroenteritis. Yeah, I think you were a little run down because you were generally run down from the, you know, because you had Lyme disease and because you were very stressed throughout this year.
Yeah.
And so you got the acute gastroenteritis, but the hernia was probably brewing, and the hernia is not your fault. There's nothing you could have done about it, about the hernia, in terms of fitness and health. If you have thin spots in your abdomen, those are hereditary. Mm-hmm. So it was going to go at some point. I asked Dr. Stewart myself, because I was able to, they put me on the phone with Dr. Stewart, and I was in Florida.
I overheard it. It was right after I came out of surgery. Yeah.
And I asked Dr. Stewart directly. I said to her, now that we know that he had a bowel obstruction, do you think that he actually had an acute gastroenteritis that caused nausea and vomiting, which then precipitated the advent of the femoral hernia? Or did he simply, pick something up or lift something, and he popped the hernia, and he what caused all the nausea and vomiting was the bowel obstruction, mm-hmm. and he never actually had gastroenteritis. And Dr. Stewart said to me, "We will never know." And I said, "Well, there is one way we could know, and that would be if I go home." Because I'm in Florida, right? If I go home and I don't scour the house with bleach, which is what you have to do with the norovirus, and I get sick, then we'll know. So clinically, here's what happened. So you had an acute gastroenteritis. You have, courtesy of Wally Meniza, right?
Yeah, my dad had at least one, if not two, hernias.
That's right. And my father also had at least one inguinal hernia, as did his brother, my Uncle Bobby, and my grandfather, their father, my Grandpa Teddy, all hernias. Abdominal wall hernias are much more common in men because there are things that have to descend through those hernias. So inguinal hernias, especially mm-hmm. when you're a baby, your testes have to descend through the inguinal canal.
Right.
And then you can also have... if you have a tendency to thin spots, you can also get femoral hernia. So what you thought was that your inguinal canal, your previous inguinal surgery had failed. That's what you thought, right?
That's what I thought.
But that's not what happened.
This is actually my third time around with a hernia.
That's right. And what you actually had was a new hernia, and you had it in the femoral canal. So there's a canal for where the inguinal canal, which is where the testes pass when they are dropping. And then there is the femoral canal, which is where the femoral artery passes. You have an artery that comes off your aorta ultimately and then passes through your groin and goes to feed your leg, and it's called the femoral artery. For feeds the, where the femur is. Femur is the big bone at, in your thigh. So that's where. So you have a femoral canal. You had a thin spot there. Yay! And we assume that you had an acute gastroenteritis. That's my assumption, that you had an acute gastroenteritis, and when you vomited, you had increased intra-abdominal pressure, and you already had a thin spot in the right side femoral canal, and you popped a hernia. And so what a hernia directly is, in your case, that you had a herniated small intestine. So part of your small intestine herniated. What a hernia is you have a thin spot in the abdominal wall, and then a part of the intestine pooches through. So if that opening is tight, it can cut off circulation to the area, and you can get varying degrees of severity. So thank God they caught it when they did, because you did in fact have some what's called bowel ischemia. Ischemia meaning you had reduced blood flow and circulation to that piece of bowel, and you did have some tissue, some fatty tissue and some bowel tissue that was starting to what we call necrotize or die. And that is why she had to take out, she only took out, what, 5 millimeters? That's what she said, right?
About 3 inches, 3 to 4. Three to four inches.
That's more than 5 millimeters.
That's way more than 5 millimeters. Yeah. She said about that much what she said. And I'm holding my hand up, giving an indication of the length.
3 inches, yeah.
Which was about 3 to 4 inches.
That's not nothing. So
it's not nothing.
She had to take out a piece of your small intestine, not your large intestine, but your small intestine, and then stitch it back together and push everything back inside. And presumably repair the hernia too.
So I'm lighter now.
Yeah, you're a little bit lighter. So that's what you had. And so you had major abdominal surgery. And what was interesting is I thought that you would have to be on more antibiotics because, you know, they opened you up and stuff. But she said you get a little bit of antibiotic before and after the surgery, but you don't go on a course of antibiotics. So since the surgery, you've been drinking kefir, right?
Uh-huh.
You've been taking probiotic. I don't know if you've been taking probiotic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you've been taking probiotic and drinking kefir. So we're repopulating your colon, your entire system with good bacteria,
mm-hmm.
which is very nice. And I'm trying to get you, symptomatically, we're trying to help you out.
What does that mean?
Well, we're trying. Well, what it means is that you've been a crabby pants and you don't always listen.
I'm not feeling 100%.
And you're a guy. So you're doing a little bit of man-sick stuff. So on the one hand, what's really funny is, are you listening, Tony Bazzini? On the one hand...
He's probably laughing and is hysterically.
You're a talker. You're an extrovert. And when something is bothering you, you talk. And if it's in the head, it comes out the mouth.
A problem with that.
And you're home a lot, so everything that happens, I get to hear about. So I get a running play-by-play of absolutely everything that is going on. I have gas. I'm in pain. I have to go to sleep. Get away from me. I don't want to take more pills. Go away. Grr. I just had a great time in the bathroom. I have to hear every single thing, which on the one hand is a little exhausting, but on the other hand, it's good because I have a running play-by-play by what's going on, so I actually know what's going on, which actually, in the end, makes me more comfortable. Because if you were, stiff upper lip, that wouldn't be as helpful.
Well,
so I should
always say that your patients aren't always straight with you or forthcoming or whatever. I mean,
you're expressing what's going on with you while at the same time, at times, refusing care. So anyway, this is a classic thing because you live with a doctor and the doctor, of course, is going to try to take care of you. And also your partner is going to try to take care of you because I'm your partner. But when partner is doctor, that's not always the best combination. And they warned us about this in school, that's a thing. When you try to treat your friends and your family, expect them to not listen to you because they don't take you seriously. It's not your fault. It's just the nature of the relationship. And it's everywhere it's that way. There's only so much you can do. Having said that, I'm monitoring you. I'm monitoring your symptoms. And even when I'm not, you don't realize it, I'm keeping track of what's going on with you. And I annoyed him a few times because he would be sleeping and I would check. I mean, this is, sounds kind of crazy, but I would check to see if you were breathing.
Well,
I just wanted to make sure.
I understand. And they, you know, I mean, when you're in the hospital, they check on you all the time, too. So
right.
Getting sleep and no offense to the folks at Wyndham Hospital, I think they were excellent. And a big, big shout out to the nursing staff for tolerating me and dealing with what I was going through. I got to tell you, that is a profession that is special.
Yeah.
You have to be a special person to be a nurse. I'm very, very impressed with what they deal with and go through.
But they do it all the time.
I know they do, and it's just shop talk with them. I understand that.
Yeah.
But the point is, I don't think that I could do that job. Well,
yeah.
Maybe I could, but it would require some adjustments.
I know.
But so if you're a nurse in training or if you're a nurse that's out there, I tip my cap to you for your ability to do this.
You know that yesterday I took a patient's cup of urine and dipped it, right?
I know. Yeah, I guess, and that's just shop talk, and I get it.
Yeah, we have to deal with body fluids.
Yeah, but that would have been a mild situation.
You're right.
With what I was dealing with.
Yes,
I was in the process of going through all this. You have to get to a point, they won't let you out of the hospital until you can process food.
Right.
And there was a period of time that food and I were just, even simple broth was not staying down.
Right.
So there's a lot going on.
Well, your whole digestive system was traumatized. So the first day. And so one of the things you have to realize about abdominal surgery, your body doesn't like your abdomen to be breached. And one of the things that can happen when you have abdominal surgery, when the abdomen is breached, is you can go into shock. I remember seeing both my sister and my girlfriend Chrissy after their C-sections. That's also abdominal surgery. I remember Chrissy was shaking. She was or maybe it was Nancy. Maybe it was both of them. They were literally shaking, and it's because you get shocky. Your body doesn't like having your abdomen breached, so you're in a little bit of shock. You're in, you know, there's a lot of fight or flight that goes on, and the ensuing hormones. And so your digestive system, you know, the vagus nerve is attached to your digestive system, so you're going to have a lot of autonomic breach at that point. And, you know, so your digestive system is not going to work right away. So because you have one of the things I don't know, which I would like you to ask Dr. Stewart today, is where in the course of your small intestine was the bit of small intestine removed? I would like to know if it was your terminal ileum. Was it your proximal small intestine?
You better write all this down for me because I won't remember unless you would like to come with me.
I can't. I'm not going to. I got a bunch of stuff to do and prepare. So what I'd like to find out, ask her exactly where, that Fran wants to know where exactly in the small intestine, because the proximal small intestine is the part that attaches. So you have your stomach, and then you have the pyloric sphincter in the stomach, the part where the sphincter, the ring of muscle that cuts off the stomach from the first part of the small intestine, the pylorus, and then the duodenum. That's the first part of your small intestine. First part of your small intestine, also known as the proximal small intestine. Proximal means closer to the center of your body. Distal means further from the center of your body. So the proximal small intestine is the part that's closer to your stomach. And the proximal small intestine is where you absorb calcium and iron. So I want to know, so that's why I need to know. The terminal ileum, which is the last part of the small intestine, is that's the part that that right before you hook up with the large intestine and the ileocecal valve, the ileum being the last part of the small intestine and the cecum being the first part of the large intestine. So the terminal ileum is where you absorb vitamin B12. So I need to know, was it in the beginning, was it at the end, or was it somewhere in the middle? One of the interesting things about, obviously, the small intestine was traumatized. So, and it's still traumatized because it is healing. And one of the things that Ron began to experience when he was starting to try to eat again. So basically what happens is when you have this kind of surgery, the first thing that happens is you, you know, they, of course, they want you to start eating. And he's on an IV the whole time. So he's getting IV, you know, first he's getting saline, he's getting some sugar. Once he can eat, they take the sugar out and they just do the electrolytes. And then they're able, if there's any meds that need to go into the IV, they can do that. So he was on an IV basically the whole time he was in the hospital. And that was great because it helped him to get rehydrated and get his electrolytes back up. And so, the first thing they do is they put him on clear liquids. And so he has literally liquids and broths and maybe tea and Jell-O, and that's all he could eat. And in the first, you know, right after is when he first started to eat, he didn't hold stuff down. So he got sick. And then gradually he was able to eat more food, and it took a few days. And so they don't let you out of the hospital basically until you can eat solid food and you have solid BM. That's what they do. And so he had his surgery on Friday, the Friday, October 4th. You had your surgery on 10-4, good buddy day.
That's it, 10-4, yep.
Yep, and then they didn't let you out of the hospital until Thursday the 10th.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I was there for 6 days.
That's
six
right.
Nights, yeah.
So you have abdominal surgery. It's a big deal. It's a big honking deal.
It's a pretty big deal.
Yes.
And then there's all the after effects of the incredible amounts of gas and pressure
right.
that's in your system.
Right.
And you're just not right. I'm still not right.
No,
I would
not.
Say I'm probably about 70% right
crabby
now.
Crabby pants. Anyway, so so anyway, and I have to
yes,
deal
dear,
with this.
Yes, dear, I love you too.
Yeah. So anyway, part of it is that you're a handful right now, and the other part of it is when you don't let me take care of you. That's frustrating. All right. So anyway, it is because I have information that can help you, and also. As much and you'd think that maybe I would be more upset, but the funny thing was I never got really really upset. I was not happy. I was not happy when I kept hearing that you still couldn't keep anything down. I was a little happier when you got to the hospital. Then they figured out that you had this bowel obstruction, and that was sort of upsetting. And then they told me you were going into surgery. And when I found out you were going into surgery, I was in the car with my mother on my way to Cousin Randy's in North Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, should I go home? Maybe I should go home.
Every day, every hour on the hour.
And they kept telling me
the same question.
And they kept telling me, don't come home. And I'm like, maybe I should be home.
There was nothing you could have done.
I could have provided you with moral support.
Yeah, you could do that on the phone.
And I could do that. And once I got home, I have to provide you. I mean, everybody else visited you in the hospital, took care of you when you needed. I have to deal with you now.
I know.
Constantly.
Right. So, you know what? It was best that you stayed away as long as you possibly could because, you know, you've got me 100% right now.
So when I heard that you were going into surgery, I was plotting. Once you went into surgery, I'm like.
Okay, for those of us who are not Yiddish. Please explain the plots.
Plotzing, it's your what is it? How do you translate plotzing? You're kind of like freaking out and dying inside, kind of sort.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I'm plotzing because you're like, oh my God, you're going into surgery, and I'm trying to make nice with Cousin Randy and my mother, and you're in surgery, and it's freak case. And you know, and I wasn't hearing anything. And then my mother actually did a very sweet thing. We were sitting in, I'm not like sobbing or weird or anything, but I'm kind of downcast after we get home from Cousin Randy's. And I'm sitting watching TV with my mom, and my mom says, come over here and give me a hug. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, I know that you're upset. I know that Ron's in surgery, and I know you're scared. And I just want to let you know that I know that, and I want to take care of you.
I was in very good hands, you know.
I mean, I know.
There was nothing you could have done, and I was in very good hands. And your staff came and visited me. Everybody came and visited me.
Yeah,
it was very nice.
But I'm in Florida, and you're in surgery. And
I know, and you're
supposed
to be chilling out on vacation so you can get all your stresses out.
But you're in surgery, and even though I know that chances chances are everything was going to be fine. You can die in surgery.
I know that.
Anesthesia can kill you.
I know that.
However, it didn't. Thank God.
However,
I mean, I know that's.
I had a long conversation with the anesthesiologist about.
Which is another issue that you don't do well coming out of anesthesia. And you had to have a conversation with the anesthesiologist.
And I came out just fine
right.
this time. Enough so that I could hear the phone call that was actually, Dr. Stewart asked me which phone number she should call. And I said, Fran's number, and I stated the number, and she said, okay,
yeah.
I'll call her right now. And I was actually within earshot of her because they hadn't taken me out of the recovery for the OR.
Right.
So I heard everything that she was telling you
yes.
on the phone, which was great.
She explained what she had done, and that's
She's very complete.
And that was when I asked her if she thought that you actually had a gastroenteritis or did you simply pop the hernia and you had an intestinal blockage. And she said that she said, we'll never know. And that's when I joked that, one way to know is if I go home and I don't clean and I get sick. So here's the thing. What is the most common cause of acute gastroenteritis?
A virus?
Yes, it's a specific virus. It's the norovirus.
Norovirus, right.
Also, and that's short for Norwalk virus. I guess it was characterized in good old Norwalk, Connecticut.
Yeah.
It's norovirus. It's extreme. So when you hear about the cruise ships, everybody gets sick on the cruise ship.
Oh, God.
That's usually
what it is.
That's
it.
The problem with the norovirus is it's a little hard to kill, so it stays on surfaces for a long time, and pretty much the only thing that kills it on surfaces is bleach. So the thing is, I had to assume that you had the norovirus and you weren't home. And so the first thing I had to do when I got home is, now, mind you, we had this wonderful friend, Bruce Bellum, and he picked me up from the airport and he was extremely indulgent. He took me to any store that I wanted so I could get exactly the right cleaning products.
Yeah, big shout out to Bruce
for
all the help. I really appreciate that.
So Bruce and I joked that he was Beatrice.
Beatrice.
Yes. So in Dante's Inferno, Beatrice is the escort. I think escorts Dante through hell, through the Inferno. And
okay.
So he was Beatrice. He helped me with my reentry. So that was
okay.
our joke. Yeah. So anyway, he helped me. So he took me to a bunch of stores. He took me to like the Cash Home. What do you call it? Cash Home Center in Willimantic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to Stop and Shop. I went to Walmart. I went to a whole bunch of stores to get exactly the right things that I needed. I needed masks. I needed gloves. I needed bleach. I needed different bleach products. Because I wasn't sure what was in the house. And I had to walk into the house gloved and masked because I didn't know what surfaces you had touched. And I had to do all the cleaning, gloved and masked up. And you have no idea how many times I washed my hands. Like I would take the gloves off and wash my hands. I had to clean and bleach. I did a dishwasher load with normal detergent and bleach.
Right.
I put bleach in it too.
Right.
All
right.
The dishes I could find that I could fit in the dishwasher. There were some that I couldn't fit. I'm like, oh, do I want to do another load? Or I just hand washed the rest of them with soap and bleach.
Mm-hmm.
And all the laundry I could find went in the wash with bleach. I had to do all the bedding. I had to strip the bed down to the, by the way, this is what you do when you suspect or when you know you have a norovirus. This is what you have to do if you don't want everybody to get sick.
Mm.
And so I had to strip the bed down to the mattress cover and I had to wash everything with bleach. And if you don't put too much bleach in, you don't get bleach stains on your clothes. I didn't.
Yeah.
So I was happy about that.
Well, I can tell you that my travels in the house were from the bed
right.
to the bathroom.
Right.
To the kitchen to refill my water glass.
Right.
And back to the bed.
Right. And so I had to do the bed. At any spots that you had soiled, I had to do those with bleach. I sprayed down the mattress with Lysol. And all the bedding went into the wash with bleach.
Mm-hmm.
All the clothes, any clothes that I could find that I thought you had worn, went in the wash with bleach.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to scrub down both bathrooms, head to toe, with bleach. And you had messed in the bathroom in our bedroom. So yeah. I had to get on my knees and scrub those with bleach.
Almost didn't make it that time. Yeah. That's why. And then I decided, you know what? I think I'm going to keep a bucket right here.
I had to do the bucket because there was a bucket that had stuff in it. Right. And I had to take care of that with bleach.
It was just a great time. I got to tell you, a really good time.
My back got very sore. My back is actually much better today, and I have been to the chiropractor since, so that's good. And I got a massage, and I went to the chiropractor, and I'm going to go get acupuncture on Friday, which is nice. So I had to do all of that before I could even be in the house. And then I turned out, and I thought I wasn't even going to sleep with you, because one of the things is that the norovirus can persist in the stool for 2 weeks after you feel better.
No stool to be had.
That's a good point. And so so I actually set up the bed in the guest room so I could sleep in it. And then you didn't come home until Thursday. So I just went to bed in the normal bed. Mm-hmm. And then you got home and I was like, eh.
Yeah.
And
you're not sick, are you?
No, the other thing that I did here's a tip for you. One of the things that I did to prevent me getting the norovirus is I drank kefir, which is fermented. I took probiotics. I drank kefir. I took grapeseed extract. Grapeseed extract, not grapefruit seed, but grapeseed extract has been studied to kill the norovirus. Now, it is an in vitro study, but you see the virus, the norovirus, which is very tenacious and sticks to surfaces, which is why you have to scrub. You have to scrub your hands. You have to scrub surfaces. The norovirus, you can't drink bleach, obviously. So, although you do if you're drinking city water, unfortunately. And we don't have city water. We have a beautiful well with terrific water in it. But anyway, I took grapeseed extract. I bought some when I was in Florida, and I took high doses of it while I was there. And so I started to get my blood levels of grapeseed up while I was in Florida, and then I continued to take it while I was here. I also took oregano oil and berberines.
Mm-hmm.
And I took all of them, because I talked to my friend David Olarsh, who's a naturopath, my dear friend David, who's a naturopath in New Hampshire.
Right.
And I got his advice, what should I do? Because we were trying to treat you for your gastroenteritis, but you ultimately couldn't take those things because you went off to the hospital. So I took them.
Yeah, well, there was nothing that would stay down if I did take it.
He suggested oregano oil and berberines. So I took those as well as the grapeseed extract at his behest. And I never got sick, which was wonderful. I didn't even get a stomach ache, I had some anxiety tummy stuff, but I never got gastroenteritis. I'm so thrilled that I actually didn't get sick. So and because Dr. Stewart said we didn't know if you had had the norovirus or not, I had to assume you did, because the most common cause of acute gastroenteritis is the norovirus, and I had to follow protocol for gastroenteritis. And then once I cleaned everything up, now our bathrooms are scrubbed better than they've been in a long time. I cleaned your bathtub, and so that was very nice. So if you are if you want to prevent getting acute gastroenteritis, of course hand washing is very important. By the way, you know how you use hand sanitizer. Alcohol, isopropyl alcohol, which is the main ingredient in hand sanitizer, doesn't kill the norovirus. Bleach does. And I don't recommend cleaning your hands with bleach. But the big thing that gets viruses off your hands is scrubbing. So if you are around somebody who has a norovirus and you want to try not to catch it, you can use, they say that using soap and hot water actually works better for the norovirus than hand sanitizer, probably because soap is slippery and you scrub your hands with the soap. I'm scrubbing it. You can't see on the radio.
Yeah, and there's a visual Fran putting her hands together and looking like
scrubbing.
She's scrubbing.
Yes. Yeah, so and you scrub vigorously. When you scrub with soap, the soap is more slippery than hand sanitizer, and then you rinse it off. With hand sanitizer, you're just rubbing it on until it dries, and you're not actually rubbing it off. But it does something. I mean, so when I'm in my office, you know, before I touch you, I always sanitize my hands, and most of my patients go, oh, that smells so good, because I use lavender hand sanitizer.
So you let them use it too?
I can, and sometimes I do. Yeah. Sometimes if the patient's like, I love the way that smells, and I'm like, sometimes I'll do that. I'll say, you want some?
Yeah.
And then I'll also tell them if they really love it and they get that you know, wide-eyed look because they love the smell of the lavender so much.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the lavender isn't just it doesn't just smell nice. It's actually doing something to positive to their brain, which lavender does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lavender is calming and cheering and healing and at a very deep level. So when they get like that, I recommend to them, get yourself some lavender. Get some real lavender essential oil and spray and candles. And we have a nice lavender because one of the things is you have to, you've as you said, you had the gas. So shout out to Emily Puckett, who made a beautiful paraffin-free, I believe, soy candle, lavender candle, and I burned it in our bedroom, and it smelled wonderful.
Mm.
So much better than, you know.
Than me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so
yeah, because
very
I'm
lovely.
Just like, you know.
You're gaseoso.
I'm a grouchy old guy.
So that's the thing. So if you're trying to prevent and treat the norovirus, if you can hold stuff down, you can try gaseoso. That's
gaseoso.
In Spanish.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So anyway, grapefruit seed extract, berberines, and probiotic. And oregano oil can all be helpful. There's also a formula called Robert's formula, which is an old nature cure. It's got echinacea and golden seal and you often either cabbage powder or bromelain. The cabbage powder has glutamine in it. It may have glutamine. Depending on who's making it, it can have slightly different ingredients. And slippery elm. And geranium, that's another one. Geranium is a neat herb because remember those wild geraniums that your mom used to like? That's a healing herb, and geraniums are very astringent, so they'll suck things out of your digestive system. So Robert's formula is something I give once people can hold stuff down. I have them go through a course of Robert's formula to help to get rid of their gastroenteritis, and I had him doing that. And so now he's in the process where he's healing from abdominal surgery. So let's talk about that. So first of all, the healing from abdominal surgery, your abdomen is breached. So, and you have to heal from it. So one of the first things we do, there's an old homeopathic protocol that I learned when I was in school, and that's you give 30C arnica and hypericum. Arnica is a wonderful herb that helps with bruising, and hypericum is St. John's wort. St. John's wort specifically helps with nerve pain. It's also, it can, you know, helps with nerves at the brain level where it makes you, you know, it's used as an antidepressant, anti-anxiety, but it can be used directly for nerve pain. So we have you alternate every 2 waking hours, 30C arnica with 30C hypericum, and that can help to speed healing. Also, wherever you feel or see the bruising, but not on any open skin, you can put arnica salve. You can put a salve with arnica and other herbs in it. And so I have an arnica salve that you can use on because you have visible bruising on your abdomen in certain places. And anywhere that feels sore or bruised that's not open skin, we can apply the arnica salve. To your actual wounds, if you want extra help with the scars healing, the scars will probably heal very nicely ultimately, but you can put calendula cream on those. And we have a lovely calendula cream that has lavender and vitamin E and aloe and grapefruit seed and a bunch of things to help to keep the wound clean and also to help it mend nicer. So that's directly to do with the surgery. Now, the other thing is that you had your small intestine resected. So let's talk about that. So that section of small intestine. So the thing is, your digestive system talks to itself from end to end. So if something's happening in your mouth, your large intestine knows about it, which is why sometimes you don't feel like you have to have a bowel movement, but you eat something and suddenly you have to go. That's called a gastrocolic reflex, that because there's the nerve signal that's sent right down along the line. Hey, guys, got to make room. Okay, Charlie, we'll send it out. So that's how that works. And it makes sense.
Charlie, huh?
Sure. Because Charlie works for the GI company. He works for the GI plant. And so does Joanne. So doesn't that sound right? Hey, Charlie.
Okay.
It's funny. Right. So we're going to send, Charlie's going to open the hatch so we can make room. All right. So, and that's what happens. So anyway, your mouth and your large intestine knows what's going on in your small intestine. And nobody's real happy right now. So the deal is,
you
have this piece of small intestine that's inflamed and it's healing and your body's working hard to heal it. So there's inflammation there. And that inflammation is actually a good thing because that's what's bringing all the healing compounds to the area. So let's talk about the function of the small intestine. Small intestine's job is to port food, obviously from your stomach to the large intestine, and you have your villi. The villi are the little finger-like projections where you absorb your nutrients. So you have breached villi there. You also have brush border enzymes along the lining of the small intestine. So in that section of the small intestine, you don't have good enzyme function. And one of the things you're complaining about is gas. So where does the gas come from? Well, one of the things that happened was you had laparoscopic surgery. And when they do, what that means, laparoscopic surgery means they make a tiny incision below your belly button, and they might make a couple of other incisions depending where they need to look. And then they blow your belly up with gas, probably nitrogen, an inert gas. So they blow it up with nitrogen. Sometimes if you're lucky, the nitrogen gas comes out in the course of the surgery, and sometimes it doesn't all come out. Because you, when I visited you in the hospital, I did tympani. I tapped on your belly, and your belly was like a big old drum. It was like full of gas. And some of that was probably the laparoscopic gas. So one way for that to come out, ultimately it gets absorbed into your digestive system, and it will come out the other end or up top. That's part of the situation. The other part of the situation is you're trying to eat things, and it's trying to pass through the small intestine. The small intestine in general is unhappy, so the function of the brush border enzymes isn't as good as it would be if you were completely healthy. So you don't have as much enzyme function. So what happens in your stomach when you digest food, what happens in your stomach is you digest food, and it's bathed with hydrochloric acid. And so not a whole lot happens in your stomach. There's a few things that get absorbed, like medium chain triglycerides, a few fats, and you also get your food mixed and bathed with hydrochloric acid, which disinfects your food, initiates protein digestion, and facilitates the absorption of calcium, iron, vitamin B12, which does not happen in the stomach. It actually happens further along in the small intestine, but it has to happen with the help of the with the help of the hydrochloric acid. And so the stomach doesn't do a whole lot, but it's critical what it does do. So now you have this bunch of food that isn't really broken down except for the highest level of structure of the protein. Now it goes into your small intestine, and the presence of the hydrochloric acid that's now in the first part of the small intestine stimulates your pancreas to send out bile, and also pancreatic enzymes, which now in the presence of the presence of bile will become active. You also have enzymes that live on the border of your small intestine. So Ron doesn't have great enzyme function, and when he doesn't have great enzyme function, that means that food is going to pass through his small intestine, not entirely digested, make it into the colon, and then the huge amounts of flora that are in the colon and go, you're not going to eat this? I'll eat it. And one of the byproducts of bacterial fermentation and digestion is gas. So that's part of why he's getting the gas, that he's got bacteria that's eating his poorly digested food. So the solutions there are to give him digestive enzymes that while he's healing from the surgery, on the one hand, you don't always like to have someone take digestive enzymes because we think it downregulates the production of of digestive enzymes. But on the other hand, in this case, he's just not going to make them. So we're going to give him digestive enzymes until he's well. And which ones are we going to use? I just want a broad spectrum one that's going to have protease to break down protein, lipase to break down fats, and amylase to break down starches. And it might also have some stuff in it to break down plants. So it might have some cellulase and hemicellulase, which is not something that we make. It's something that our bacterial friends make, and that animals who are herbivorous, like, you know, ruminants, like cows and goats and sheep make, and also bunnies. So we don't make hemicellulase and cellulase. We have to take it, or we have to rely on bacteria to make it for us in our digestive systems. So we're going to give him enzymes. So the other thing is to alleviate his gas discomfort is to give him carminatives, for example, fennel tea. And fennel tea, the way that carminatives work, carminatives have... they have essential oils in them, and what they do is they do a little bit of a stimulating, actually a counter-irritant effect on the digestive system, and they enhance peristalsis. So they make your digestive system just move things along a little bit better. So if you got gas in there, it's going to come out a little bit better. Another thing that you can use to help with gas is activated charcoal, which we might have you try. Activated charcoal, you have to be careful because it will absorb anything in its path. So you don't take it at the same time you're taking any other kind of medications or herbs or supplements. And beware, it can turn your stool black. Don't be alarmed by it. You ate charcoal, it's going to come out black on the other end.
Well, you know, things are I hate to say this, this is a terrible pun, they're moving right along right now.
So oh, right.
I'm better than I was a few days ago
activated charcoal will simply absorb the gas and help you to excrete it better. Then there is another pretty benign pharmaceutical called simethicone, and that's what's in like GasX and Mylanta Gas, and you can get, you know, various, and you probably get, you know, store brand simethicone at drugstore of your choice, which we can get for you. And I almost want to get it for you because I want you to try it and see how it works, because part of this is as much as I'm taking care of you, it is intellectually interesting for me.
Yeah, I know. I'm the wonderful guinea pig that you live with.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. Yeah.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
But I mean, if I learn from you, I can help other people.
But the beauty is there's always a doctor in the house.
That's right.
So yeah. That's a nice thing, too.
So simethicone is this substance, and what it does is it changes the surface tension of the gas, and it wraps gas into little slippery bubbles, so it's easier to excrete, and that's all it does. And it does, so you don't absorb it; it just goes through your digestive system, and it does that. So if you're still pretty gassy, I want you to try that, so we see what it does for you. And I think the simethicone is actually more benign than the activated charcoal, because the activated charcoal is going to suck up everything in its path, whereas the simethicone will address the gas directly, surround it with its little simethicone smoothness, and it's not going to affect other things you're consuming.
Well, I mean, everything's getting better every day, and Dr. Stewart told me it's probably about a 2-week process before things are actually working, and it's a 2-week process before the plumbing goes back to normal plumbing.
To quote from a song, "Knowing that you would have wanted it this way."
Oh dear.
I do believe I'm getting stronger every day.
Chicago.
1, 2, 3. Yeah.
There you go. All right. There you are.
Nice.
A little side note there.
Very good. Okay. So
I just looked in. My small intestine is 20 feet long, and I've lost only about 4 inches, 3 or 4 inches of it.
So you have 16 to 17 feet.
I still got a lot going on down there. So
yeah.
That's good, because that's where all the absorption of your nutrients
that's
are.
That's right.
All.
But
so
like
it's kind
I
of
said,
important to have your small intestine.
But the thing is, your intestine is traumatized. So the other
thing
that you can do is you can take substances that actually literally heal the intestine. So you could be eating bone broth. That's going to help, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So the bone broth is going to provide collagen and other nutrients to actually heal the lining. So the lining gets more substance for it to heal. You can do things like DGL, deglycerinated licorice, which reduces inflammation and improves the quality of the mucus. You can do aloe juice or aloe in general, because that's also healing and soothing. Mm-hmm. Probiotics, we already said. And glutamine. Glutamine is the chief nutrient of the small intestine, so that's a fuel to help your small intestine to work better, and it will also help with the healing. N-acetyl glucosamine is also a healing substance for the small intestine.
Yep.
So there you go. And we have a product that has all those things in it, so that
okay.
we can that.
Well,
that
you
we
know
can
what?
You
just point me in the direction, and I'll do what you have, what I have to do.
Will you?
Well, will I now? Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the answer, on the air is yes. big sigh. Yeah, there you
so
go.
So in case you're wondering what happened to us and why Ron didn't sit in and do play older episodes of Radio Naturopath the past couple of weeks, that's what happened. And I asked his permission for us to talk about it on the air. And he's like, let's go for it, because it's educational and we want people.
And my friend Colin down in Willimantic has been listening in on the whole thing. And he sent me over a message and said, oh, my God, I can't believe this is, So it is. You know, we just... for a radio guy to see that we're making very interesting radio today was good. That's a compliment.
Awesome. All
right. Hi, Colin.
So we're going to go. So
All right.
So that was an interesting show.
That's
so
it.
Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath. And I'm going to wrap it up until next week. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. By the way, for all our Jewish friends, L'Shana Tova, Tikatevo Umituka, which means Happy New Year, and may it be a sweet year. And I hope you had an easy fast. And Chag Sameach Sukkot, which means Happy Sukkot. You know, if you see those little tabernacles next to Jewish homes and at Jewish synagogues, you can go sit under it and pray and eat an apple and read and hang out. And hopefully there's a gathering there that you can go hang out at and shake the lulav and the etrog, you know, to celebrate the harvest. Harvest celebration. All right. So I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.